The Russians are coming! The Russians are coming! Well, thankfully, the Russians are not coming in big battle tanks, at least not yet, but they are coming as criminals who hack their way into our nation's digital infrastructure where they can steal and destroy at will. And so we ask, can hackers destroy our ability to feed ourselves?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1154th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lyon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metroforum.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, used to be you could protect your watermelon patch by sitting at the gate with a double-barrel shotgun in hand. Melon thieves would see that shotgun at the ready and just keep moving right on down the road. Today, your melon patch might well be over 1,000 acres, and its irrigation system is likely managed via computer from your office in a large complex in town. There are those out there who take great joy and profit by hacking into your computerized irrigation system, where they wander around the digital corridors collecting information, like your password, and find connections to other computerized systems, like your bank accounts, hang around where they can wait and watch. You don't even know if they're there. America's food and agriculture sector is one of 16 critical infrastructures identified by the Department of Homeland Security as being threatened by digital hackers. Those digital hackers are foreign governments like Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, or who knows, maybe even Iceland. Or there are criminal gangs associated with a foreign government. We are told the most likely scenario would be for a malicious software bug of some kind to destroy industrial control systems, which could cause food production to come to a screeching halt. The prospect of having some bad actor flip a digital switch and turn off our ability to eat leads us to ask, can hackers shut down our ability to feed ourselves? Well, who better to ask that then Dr. Bob Norton, who is the director of Auburn University's Open Source Intelligence Lab, also the faculty liaison for the Auburn Cyber Initiative and chair of Auburn's Food System Institute's Food and Water Defense Working Group. Welcome, Dr. Bob, to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, I'm looking at all of these titles of yours and wondering what the heck you do in your spare time.
Well, I don't have a lot of spare time, so I keep pretty busy.
Well, let's start off with the obvious question. Is our food supply really threatened by hackers?
In the most general sense, it is. In the specifics, the government is very aware of some of these issues, but is frankly struggling with trying to coordinate efforts because many of the problems reside in the private sector and not in the government sector.
So the agriculture being in the private sector, you know, probably why would it want government interference? Something like that, right?
Well, the issue with the private sector, of course, is that the government really doesn't have a lot of presence there, and probably should not have a lot of presence there. And so, many of these corporations, many of the food corporations, agricultural groups, really are having to find these problems on their own. They are certainly being assisted by the government, but they are responsible for their own systems and therefore have to find the solutions themselves with government advice, but also advice from the true cyber experts, those people that are working for many of the security groups. And I think that these security groups, in many cases, have more expertise on some of the things that business can do versus what government can do.
when did you, Dr. Norton, as a individual, you know, when did the apple fall on your head and you realize that this is really some serious stuff happening here? Was there a moment when you went, oh my goodness, we have to do something?
My awakening came over a decade ago. Really, if you look at it, probably closer to two decades ago. I came out of the military and looked, my area of interest and specialty was looking at biological warfare agents, and spent much of my career looking at the Russians, what some of the Russians programs were doing in developing biological weapons. And so it was a natural transition when I realized that cyber could be equally destructive to the food systems, to agriculture. And so after 9/11, we really began to look quite seriously at the cyber realm.
You know, that brings up an interesting notion. Is there a significant difference between a biological bug and an electronic bug with respect to hacking?
In the most technical terms, yes, there are differences, but the results could be equally devastating. And I think that's one of the things that is one of my take-home messages when I talk to government groups or to the military or to commodity groups, whoever it might be. The cyber realm really deeply embeds into your systems, into your processes, and that can be, you can have devastating effects very, very rapidly, whereas a biological agent may take much longer. A biological agent, for a number of reasons, which we don't need to go into, are more difficult to deliver. A cyber bug is very easy to deliver, and in some cases, we kind of help the adversary by not having adequate safety controls in our systems, and our security may not be at the level it should be.
Well, we certainly want to go there here later in the program about how we can protect ourselves from all of this, but why Russia? It seems like Russia is being blamed for just about everything these days. I know you looked at what they were doing with respect to biological agents, and that was your heads up. But, you know, we seem to be treated with Russia with Russia blame on just about everything, colluding with President Trump, colluding with Secretary of Clinton. It seems like no matter what is going wrong, it seems to be related to Russia. So why Russia?
Russia is what we call a persistent threat actor. The real issue with Russia is that we're seeing some of the activities that we saw when they were the Soviet Union before the fall of the wall. And so some of their bad practices, some of the things that they commonly did in the past, are still very much prevalent in the current system. So Russia has been an adversary in the past, continues to be an adversary presently, and will probably be an adversary in the future. So we're looking at them because they deserve to be looked at as an adversary.
Mm-hmm. What about China and Iran? And what about North Korea? And what about Iceland?
I can't speak for Iceland, but I can speak for the other threat nations, the adversarial nations. China is a persistent problem, will continue to be a persistent problem. China is very adept at stealing information, proprietary information, information about systems. That has several advantages, which we can talk about from their perspective. Iran, again, a persistent threat actor, pretty skilled in the cyber realm, but not at the level of Russia and certainly not China. North Korea, again, things are dynamic, not sure where that's going to all go, but for now we think of North Korea as still a very strident adversary of the United States.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about how it's not necessarily the government of Russia or China or whatnot. It may be just gangs of hoodlums who are having fun digging up information and then selling that information to their government.
Russia is one of those nations where it is sometimes difficult to discern what is actually criminal and what is sanctioned by the government. In most of these, or all of these threat nations that I've mentioned, cyber criminals are allowed to act because the government finds their activities to be of benefit to their overall goal.
They're kind of like government-sanctioned pirates.
That's exactly right. They're proxies.
Wow.
So they're actually acting on behalf of the government or allowed to act, but the government can always say, well, we had nothing to do with that.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break, folks. Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson with Dr. Bob Martin, and you right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Do you think it possible that hackers can shut down our ability to feed ourselves? Boy, a frightening notion, but there's certainly hackers out there. And if you think about it, what did we do to Iran some years ago when they were spooling up their centrifuges to make a nuclear bomb? Well, we hacked our way into their computer system. I don't know what we did, but I think we spun those centrifuges to death. Something like that. Dr. Norton, we did do it at first, didn't we?
We have never, as a nation, have never admitted that we were involved in Iran. So I think I'll leave that one alone. There were certainly some very skilled cyber experts that did some damage to the Iranian nuclear system, but I'll leave that one.
So maybe it wasn't us. Maybe it was a friend, or maybe it was Iceland. You never can tell.
Yes, here we go back with Iceland. Yes, absolutely.
Well, you have to have a little fun with those folks up there. It's awfully cold, and they spend a lot of time sitting in front of their computer screens, and who knows what they're up to, right? So let's take us to a little tour of the world of hacking. Do you know where that word came from, hack, to hack something?
I'm not really familiar where the original term came from, but it's been used for many, many years. The military used it decades ago as far as cyber systems are concerned.
Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a process with respect to hacking. First of all, you have to hack your way into some place where you're not wanted, right?
That's correct. And depending on the threat actor, it can be a very quiet, very subtle thing that the entry point. In other cases where they're less skilled, it's pretty obvious that something is happening to your systems. We kind of look at the threat nations in terms of abilities. So Russia is right up at the top. They're very quiet and can do things very, very skillfully. The Chinese are next. They are rapidly approaching the capabilities of Russia, but aren't quite there yet, but they can do some skillful things. North Korea and Iran, again, they don't have the skill levels that you see in China and Russia, but they're all improving.
And so what they do when they're inside our computer systems is install a program or two, right?
It could be a variety of things. What we're concerned about is malware that's placed in there that, again, could be very, very quiet. It just sits there. And that's one of our concerns, is as we look at these systems across the United States in these critical infrastructures, we know that they're being hit daily. I mean, that's a given. There are thousands, literally thousands, on any critical infrastructure, thousands of things happening, attacks happening every hour. You know, you're talking about some systems that are being hit more than a million times a day. So we know these things are happening. It's those things that get inside and then just sit there and don't really do anything. And that's what we're particularly interested in. So why are those that we ask a lot of questions about? Why are those that malware, why are they sitting there quietly? Why aren't they doing something? What is going to activate them? What is the end purpose of these things?
Well, you know, it recently saw in the paper, local paper, where some pervert installed a camera in a coffee shop bat restroom and was taking pictures of people going to the restroom. And I guess that's exactly what hacking is, isn't it? Where you sneak into some place you're not supposed to be and install a program and then sit back and hopefully nobody catches you. But in this case, somebody caught the camera and the guy that did it. But here we have a situation with respect to our nation's critical digital infrastructure where we're being attacked a million times a day, did you say?
In some cases, some of the critical infrastructures are being hit more than a million times a day, yeah.
So is there a way of finding that camera that's taking pictures of what they're not supposed to be taking pictures of those malicious software that they're just sitting there? Is there a way to spot that stuff?
There are ways, and some of those things are evolving. So there's some approaches being taken as the adversaries become more advanced in their capabilities. We have to become more advanced in our defenses. So you've got some of the big security companies that have processes and they have equipment and software that can monitor the functionality of the system. And then when you see anomalies, those things start to act automatically. As we move forward with artificial intelligence, we hope we will be able to make things more robust, make those defenses more robust. But, of course, is artificial intelligence can be used in a positive way, can also be used in a negative way.
And I guess that would describe the race between the U.S. and China to develop the biggest supercomputer then, right? That would be pretty much indicative of who's going to have the best artificial intelligence.
It's an ongoing race. We are very good at these supercomputers, but also China is increasing its ability. And it kind of bounces back and forth. You know, one month we'll have the fastest supercomputer, and the next month China will have it. So it's a back and forth.
And what about kids in general, just kids having fun as hacking? It seems like that's where we started. It seems like you have a situation where a neighborhood kid sitting in a basement, you know, for hours on end would hack his way into the Defense Department computer and, you know, get information and do something stupid. Do we still have trouble with kids hacking into this critical infrastructure? Or have we kind of moved past that and developed defenses that can keep the kids out?
We do see the amateur hacker attacking, hitting things. As systems become more robust in their defenses, these amateurs are being pretty much eliminated. They do occasionally get in, but it's the more skilled hackers that we're worried about. And when you start getting into the professional, the government level, government military level hackers, those are the ones we really worry about. So does it happen? Yes. Occasionally you'll have a website or something that's been hit and defaced, or you'll have a system that'll be penetrated and it might get the names of all the email addresses or something like that on the amateur side. But those are increasingly becoming less and less common because of the robust systems that are being put into place.
So these are things we're really working on all the time, and is to fight the amateur off and so that we can focus on the professional. Folks, you're tuned into the 1154th edition of the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about the critical digital infrastructure that controls our agriculture. And we're asking, can the hackers shut down our ability to feed ourselves? And who better to ask than Dr. Bob Norton, who is the chair of Auburn's Food Systems Institute's Food and Water Defense Working Group. food and water. So water's a big part of agriculture, too. And our drinking water and the water we use to get by in the world. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk with Dr. Norton about the critical infrastructure of food and agriculture and water, and where we see ourselves as being vulnerable in those sectors. And I guess there's a lot of places, you know, just by virtue of all of the electronic devices we have become used to using. I was just talking with a fellow the other day about how he's setting up a digital payment system, whereas people can buy something from one country and it's all digital. You know, if you can hack into that, no telling what you can do, what kind of trouble you can get into. So this is the Food Chain Radio Program, right back with Dr. Bob Norton and you.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Is it possible for somebody sitting at a computer in another nation, maybe Russia, maybe China, Iran, North Korea, who knows, maybe even Iceland, to sit at that computer and break in to control systems of our critical agriculture infrastructure, turn off the switch or scramble something up and put us out of the business of feeding ourselves? Is that possible? Well, Dr. Bob Norton, is it?
It is possible to do great damage to the food system. Could our adversaries cause starvation? That would be the most dramatic effect, but it would be the kind of thing you would expect to be attempted only in times of war. Our adversaries as we have them today, Iran, China, North Korea, and Russia, are not going to try to starve Americans. But in time of war, they certainly will try.
Well, now, not so long ago here on the California Central Coast, somebody shot up with AK-47s, no less, an electrical substation near San Jose, California. And they just sat there and they shot it and shot it and shot it until it died. Poof, it went out. So it seemed to me what a stupid thing to do, unless that was something that you're checking on. You're seeing if this substation is so vulnerable that you could just shoot it with an AK-47. So is that what the Russians and the Chinese are doing, you know, by looking around in our digital corridors, as it were, looking for that vulnerability?
We call it, in my realm, we call it they're probing. So are there probing missions going on from these countries? Yes, absolutely. They're getting into systems, seeing how systems work, seeing how our defenses work, seeing how we react to things happening. That is ongoing. We see that constantly in most of the critical infrastructures, these probing kind of operations where you may or may not see them come in. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're gathering intelligence. They're seeing what we're capable of doing, and therefore can develop go-arounds, can develop various strategies in which to overcome the things that we are able to muster in time of an event.
So if they know what our critical vulnerabilities are, it would seem that would be a decided tactical advantage in some kind of conflict. But do we know what they know?
That's a difficult question to answer. The United States don't think that we are not aware of some of these issues that are going on. The United States is very aware of a lot of things, and we tend to hear in the press a view that indicates that we're kind of sitting here helpless. And anything could, it's very much farther from the truth. We have the capability to respond. We have the capability to strike back. And we have experts as good or better than virtually anyone you can find around the world. Are we still having these problems? Yes, absolutely. But one of the reasons that we're having these problems is because the United States has chosen not to strike back in major ways, because striking back can actually cause collateral damages that we don't want to be associated with.
Like what?
Well, I use an example in some of the talks I've given, an example of a city, and this is not food or agriculture, but it is water related. And it shows the complexity of things. There was a city that was doing testing of their fire hydrant system, which is attached to the municipal water supply. Well, in that testing, and those valves, the things that we used to turn on a pipe, are now done via the cyber realm. So there are valves that are electronically controlled, and you can go onto the keyboard and type close, and it will close. So that's just an example of something that is being driven more and more toward the cyber realm. What happened in this particular case is the fire department was testing the hydrants. They asked the city municipal water system people to close down a couple of valves so they could test the hydrant directly. They closed the valves, and then within about 5 minutes, fog started to show up in the hospital surgical rooms that were located across the street from where they were testing these hydrants. And so you look at this and you go, how could this possibly have happened? Well, what, unbeknownst to that city at the time, was that the water that was supplying the hydrants was also the main water line that supplied the hospital cooling towers.
Wow.
So that was a collateral event. Fortunately, it was immediately realized what had happened, and they corrected it. No patients were harmed in this particular situation. But there could have been disaster in the end of that situation. So what we talk about in my realm is cyber bombs. And people want, they will often say, we need cyber bombs so that if we get hit, we can go back and bomb, you know, whoever it is that is doing this. Well, it would be nice if we could do that, but we can't for a number of reasons. One, it's illegal in the United States. We can't be, for instance, food corporations can't hack back without having some gentlemen in dark suits show up at their offices. So what we talk about is the defensive side of things. There is increasingly talk about being able to strike back, but I think we're a ways away from that being allowed. Because, again, when you send out something to a computer system, you don't know what that computer system is attached to. So, yes, can we destroy? We certainly can destroy computer systems at the other end, assuming that we get the right place. But that computer system might be attached to other things that would enable an event in which collateral damage happened. So kind of the worst case scenario that we talk about is you hit back and that cyber system is attached to the neonatal center in that country, and then you've inadvertently killed children.
Boy, so if we do get into a big cyber warfare, it's going to get really messy for everybody in the whole world, it sounds like. But when we come back from this quick break, I'd like to look at the vulnerabilities of agriculture and see where we can really lose it, where we can lose the ability to feed ourselves, where the wrong person gets a hold of the computer system. Gone. What do we eat? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Dr. Bob Norton. Right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it would seem to be pretty hard to hack into the nation's food and agriculture sector and do harm, because we're talking about farmers out there in the field. But not so much anymore out in the field. Most likely, a lot of them are sitting behind a desk someplace, monitoring things with digital instruments and computers and whatnot, and which means they're connected, and being connected means being vulnerable. Is that a fair statement, Dr. Bob Norton?
It is. As we look at critical infrastructures, the old way of looking at them is in a very isolated sense. So you have ag, you have the food system, you have electricity, you have water. The way that we look at them today is these are all interconnected and they're touching each other. And we talk about what are called cascading effects. So a cascading effect is that the endpoint could be in the food realm or in the agricultural realm, but an attack could start in another critical infrastructure and then basically cause that cascading effect and bounce into food and agriculture.
Could you give us an example of that?
Certainly. The example that I use is, let's think about the food chain. So we have agriculture producing food products, and we have food processing, taking those products, converting them to whatever form they need to be for the consumer, and then they are going out to the consumer via the being trucks and transportation systems. So a cascading effect could start in, let's say, the electrical system. So a cyber attack occurs. The power grid goes down in that particular area, let's say wherever, California, in a particular part of California. So the power grid goes down, and that would in turn affect the water system. That water system is critical for the farm products to be converted into food products. And then, so you've got that cascading effect where for however long it takes to repair the damage, you've got the food process stopped because of water not coming into the system.
And similarly, the buying and selling of products, you know, somebody sitting in an office selling artichokes to somebody in Virginia. And if the communications is compromised, is taken over, is hacked, the sale doesn't go through. And maybe it does go through, but the person that buys it can't communicate with somebody to pick it up and haul it across the country. And so the trucker sits there with not knowing what to do, and the load of artichokes sits there with nowhere to go. So I guess there's a lot of different ways that hacking into the food and agriculture sector could really mess things up.
That's correct. And I think that it is almost universally accepted now by both government and industry that an attack on food or an attack on agriculture, we're not talking about just biological agents or chemical agents being used on those products. We're talking about the full spectrum of critical infrastructures that through which the attack can originate.
So this is starting to get spooky. Are you spooked? I mean, you're the one that's sitting here really looking at this and looking at the incredible amount of vulnerabilities. And once you start thinking about it or once you start looking, there's a lot of vulnerabilities.
There are a lot of vulnerabilities. And I've had many people ask me how I sleep at night. And I actually sleep quite soundly because what I do, what my job entails, is identifying those vulnerabilities and then finding solutions for them. So what I try to do is make the adversary lose sleep in developing strategies and tactics by which we can counter what they're doing.
Where do you start?
We start looking at each system independently, and that's one of the things, that's a strength and it's a weakness in the United States. It's a strength because every system is different. Every processing plant or every agricultural commodity group, there are variations.
I guess that would be a strength because they're not all the same, so you know, one hack can't hack all.
That's correct. That's exactly right. But it's a weakness in that when you have, again, for instance, a food product like a processed chicken, a breaded processed chicken, well, there are many, many inputs that come into that. So if you have a chicken McNugget at McDonald's, if you start looking back, that is a very, very complex food chain to create that what seems to be a very simple product. So you have all of these inputs. Every one of those inputs has to be as strong as the defenses for the output. Otherwise, you create a vulnerability. And that makes it very complex.
Wow. Just thinking about the food chain of a chicken McNugget, you know, extraordinarily complex when it gets right down to it. Well, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Bob Norton, who is somebody who should know, how on earth we can be safe in this digital world of connectivity. We are all connected, and that in that connectivity is our vulnerability. How can we live there and be safe? Woo! This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Dr. Bob Norton and you. Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, how safe are you? Can somebody hack into your computer system, get your passwords, get connected to your bank account, find out all of those secret messages that you've been sending to somebody you're not supposed to be? Oh my goodness, we're all in deep trouble. Is there any way we can be safe and secure? Dr. Bob Norton, that's your job. How do we do it?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to emphasize is, as far as the consumer or the average citizen, what we do is we say you've got to think about that you are a target. So if you know you're a target and then react properly, you're going to be less likely to be a victim. So think about what you do and how you do it. Passwords on all of your accounts, those are something that are very simple solutions, quick fixes. Is it going to eliminate all risk? No. But, you know, having a password, as many people do, a child's name or their birth date or the word password, those are not acceptable. So you got to get real about your password. Change them regularly. Keep all of your...
Oh, doctor, that's the ultimate terror. You know that. Changing passwords regularly.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But again, if for those people that have gone through where they've had identity stolen, I think they would be probably the best advocates for something like that, because oftentimes it's really simple things that allows the adversary to get in. Mm-hmm. Not having your malware protection up to date, your antivirus protection up to date. Those are things that have to be done.
The easiest way for them to get in is when you invite them in. Yeah, come on in. Have a look around. I'll click OK here.
That's right. And we tell people, you know, it's really not a good idea to surf the web, because a lot of times you really don't know where you are, and you don't know who's on the other side of that. Place that you're visiting on the web. So that may look very benign. A website may look very benign, but it could be a trap. So be very careful where you go. And again, if you think about that you are a target, that will hopefully help you realize that you just don't go wandering. It is the Wild West. The cyber realm is the Wild West, and you have to be careful where you're going.
Because they're going to be there laying in wait for you. You talk about rebooting your home routers for 30 seconds or so. What does that do?
Well, that was suggested by, believe it or not, both the United States and the UK government. And in May of this year, they did a rather unprecedented thing, and they said, we have this problem with these routers. And what it entailed was Russia was targeting the Ukraine, and they had about 500,000 internet-connected routers on a worldwide basis in, I think it was a total of about 54 countries that had been compromised. But it was a relatively simple compromise. And so being able to, or doing something just as simple as turning that router off and then rebooting it after 30 seconds, that eliminated the problem. And of course, the government is also saying, if you have a password on your router, if it's a password that was given to you when you bought the router or got the router,
change the password. Well, Dr. Bob Norton, we're out of time, but sure want to thank you for just holding our attention to this incredible vulnerability within which we all live now. We're all connected, and we're all vulnerable, and that's just the way it's going to be. So all we can do is make ourselves strong and sit there with our double-barrel shotgun and don't let anybody in the front door of your computer system. Dr. Bob Norton, thank you so much for joining us. Chair of Auburn's Food System Institute's Food and Water Defense Working Group. Look him up. You'll find him. Thank you all for tuning in.